Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Insight into Healing. My name is Alexa Servadidio and I'm your host. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, psychotherapist. I've been in the field for 8 years now. I currently work as a therapist at a large mental health clinic and I also have my own private practice. I work with a range of clients from individuals, couples, families, dealing with different things from anxiety, depression, domestic violence, and sexual trauma. My show is intended for educational purposes only and should never take the place of your own personal therapy and medication management. Well, let's get started with our first question. Dear Insight into Healing, I'm overwhelmed in my daily life. I work full-time as a nurse and I've been married for 2 years. At this point, we do not have any children, but are planning to in the future. How do I organize my cluttered life? Well, this is a very common question that I get a lot from men and from women, and also for some students or people going back to school. Life can become so overwhelming and become so busy that sometimes we don't take time out for the people that we love, for our family, for our children, and for ourselves too, which is really important. We get caught up in, you know, everyday things with work, with school, driving kids different places, with activities, that we forget to take some time just to sit back, relax, and enjoy what's going on. So this listener works full-time as a nurse, and she's been married for 2 years. So I'm not sure with your schedule full-time as a nurse, if you're working days, nights, or if it kind of fluctuates week by week and it changes. Because that can also be really hard on a person, hard on the body, hard on a relationship if your sleeping patterns are changing. Sometimes you're sleeping during the day, sometimes you're sleeping at night. So I think it's maybe talking to your boss, if possible, to see if there's any chance that maybe you can do all days or you can do all nights or switch month to month or every couple of months to get some idea of what your schedule is. And also being married for 2 years, what does your husband do? I'm not sure he didn't answer in this question what his work schedule is like, because that can also be very difficult and also very overwhelming to people working full-time. So first I would start to say, when are your days off? If you and your husband could have, you know, days, do you have days off at the same time? Could you plan things for yourself? Because I think that's what's really, really important, doing something you really enjoy. And it doesn't mean you have to keep your whole day busy running and doing this. Sometimes just, you know, if it's nice weather, going to the beach, going to the park, or sitting in the backyard, maybe discussing something, going out to lunch. Because I find taking time to really sit with yourself, to be with yourself and not being distracted by different things that are going on, really allows your body, your mind, your soul to kind of slow down, to regroup, to kind of rebuild itself. That's why it's so important to make sure you're getting 8 to 10 hours of sleep a night. And I know a lot of people say, wow, I wish I could get 8 to 10 in a week sometimes. But I think it's really important that people don't understand. We have to schedule taking care of ourselves. That's another job, to make sure that we take time out of our busy life to take care of ourselves. If we don't take care of ourselves, it's hard to take care of other people. It's hard to be the best we can be. So one, plan a day that you and your husband can have some time together, can do something relaxing, something enjoyable. Make sure you make time for each other. Two, also with your cluttered life, look at your life. What are some things in your life that maybe you could get rid of? Different activities or something that's, you know, maybe at the bottom of the list that, you know, maybe you totally don't have to get rid of it, or maybe you can put it on the shelf and say, you know, maybe in a couple of months or maybe next year, my schedule will be a little bit more free that I'll be able to do this. I know sometimes we want to get everything done and we want to be involved in all these activities and do everything and not waste any time. But that can also be a danger. That can also, you know, cause us to overload. That can cause us to take on too much and to be really stressed. And it might be stuff that you're enjoying. And, you know, you love your job and you love what you do and you love all the activities and all the stuff that you're doing. But I think what it is, even if you really enjoy it and you're passionate about what you do, it's very important to take care of yourself. And I say this a lot to my clients. You have to make sure you schedule time during the day, during the week, during the night, that you have, even if it's out 10 minutes, 20 minutes, that you can just sit and reflect, not think about, you know, what do I have to do, what did I get done, I didn't do that right, what else is going on, to kind of just sit maybe in silence, listening to calming music, maybe reading a calming book, reading the Bible, maybe repeating some positive affirmations to kind of allow the mind, the brain to unwind and to come back down to a nice, calm level. Because if we're always on overload, if we're always on that heightened state, running, 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 we don't take time to really appreciate what's going on and acknowledge what we're doing and be happy with what we're doing. And I think also, you know, that you've been married for 2 years, it's, you know, it's busy, you're doing things, but I think you really have to pay attention to your marriage. That is also something that needs work, and I think a lot of people don't realize that. They, you know, they get married and they feel that it should just work it out on its own, and it doesn't. Being married is kind of like a job too, and not in a negative way. I mean, you have to work at it. You have to make time for your spouse. You have to make time to communicate. You have to learn to compromise. You have to learn to communicate. Things just don't really happen all the time by themselves. Some things fall into place, but I think you have to make a conscious effort. You have to say, okay, this isn't a priority in my life, and I need to make sure I make it a priority. And I think also to make sure you allow your spouse to know that you're a priority and that yourself is a priority. Because I find sometimes when both people in a relationship, in a marriage, are so overwhelmed and so stressed out at work, you come home and you take it out on each other. And that's what ends up happening. And then the fights start and then the marriage starts breaking down. So we really want to be aware of how are we treating our spouse. Yes, it's good to come home and tell your spouse about your day and to go over things and work things out. And if you're frustrated, this is someone you can talk to. This is someone you can express this to. But you want to make sure that not the only every time you're with your spouse, it's kind of like a dumping ground. This, you just see your spouse and you kind of dump all the negativity, you dump all the all the stress out, and then you go back to your day or back to your night. You want to make sure there's, yes, you're allowed to explore, dump some negativity, but you also have to reinforce the positive. We can do this negativity, but we have to bring the positive in so it's not always this negative interaction. Because then if you think about it, and another way, if you have a friend that only comes to you when they're upset and they're dumping and dumping and they're always negative and they're always, you know, not happy, you kind of get, you don't want to be around that person all the time. And I see in a lot of relationships, that's what starts to happen. You start to know every time you talk to your spouse or they come home from work, it's going to be this horrible thing. And, you know, maybe you had a good day and you don't want to deal with it, or it's kind of, you know, it's overwhelming. And it's also very upsetting to see someone you love stressed out and upset. And if you can't really, if maybe it's your job you're not happy with or something else, it's hard to, if you can't, you know, leave the job or leave the position or you know, end the relationship, and you have to kind of be with it, it's a process and it's a struggle. So you really want to make sure when you say, how can I organize my clutter? You want to organize your physical clutter, your emotional clutter, and your mental clutter. All three are very important. There's three huge areas of your life and they all need to be addressed, because if not in one area, it will build up so much that it can become overwhelming. So really sit down, I think, with your husband and say, okay, what's going on? Where do you think this clutter is? What is stuff can we put to the side? You know, as they say, when people do spring cleaning, there's three boxes, throw out, maybe keep. You know, maybe you have to do that with different areas in your life. What is stuff that you want to keep? What are things you don't want to have anymore? What is a maybe? And it's a process. It doesn't happen overnight. I think it takes a while, and it really takes some good communication, and that's some great quality time, too, to be spending with your spouse, to have those moments together, to be able to say, okay, let's work on this together, and it's a team effort. So thank you so much for your question. Let's go on to our second question. Dear Insight into Healing, I am a single mom, and I have a 14-year-old son. He is very smart, but he seems to isolate himself a lot. I am concerned because he has begun to show aggressive tendencies towards his younger sister. What is wrong with him? Okay. What stuck out in this question is he's very smart, but he seems to isolate himself a lot. Where I'd be interested to explore more is this something that's always been going on with him? Or is this something that is new? Is this something that's a changed behavior? I think if it is something new, it's looking back, has there been any events or triggers or something that's been going on that would trigger this isolation? Because the isolation, then you said he started to show some more aggressive tendencies towards his younger sister. Isolation and aggression are two red flags. They're two warning signs I like to look at that there's something going on. I don't know, is he in school, is he being bullied? Is he having some academic problems? Is he having some relationship problems? Because that's around the age where, you know, people are starting to find themselves, through friends and relationships, identity. I would really want to explore that with him. I know being a single mom must be very hard, that you're kind of taking on all the roles in the family, that, you know, sometimes timing isn't always, you know, at your will. So I would maybe want to sit down with your 14-year-old son and see if there's anything going on with him. Because I always like to say, you know, safety first, nip it in the bud, get it when it's early, get it at the beginning, and it's, you know, with the start of this problem, because he said he's been starting to show aggressive tendencies. So it sounds like it's starting to escalate, this behavior. So I think this is the perfect time to discuss this with him. And when you say aggressive tendencies, you know, what are these gestures? Are they full-out gestures of aggression? Are they ideation? Are they words? Are they thoughts? Is it getting very physical? And I think also looking at the safety. Are you frightened? Are you concerned about the safety of your daughter? Is this usual, you know, brother-sister pushing around and, you know, bickering back and forth? Or have you seen it taken to a different level? I think also trust your gut instinct. Parents know, moms know, dads know. You have that gut like, something's not right, something's off. Trust it. You know, it's better to be safe than sorry. I would, number one, sit down and really talk to him and ask him what's going on. Think if there's any major events that happened, change of school, loss of friendship, death in the family, move, divorce, how you're doing with your job, how your relationship is doing, look at that. And then also trying to see what's going on with him in school. Look at his grades, talk to his teachers, talk to the school counselor, the guidance counselor, see if there's any acting out in school. I would also look at his friends, see what his friends are like. Is this a new group he's hanging out with? Is there any drugs or alcohol involved? I think that's something to really look at, you know, any addiction, any substance abuse. You want to take a look at that also with the isolation and the aggression. And also seeing, you know, are there any learning disabilities? Is something going on with school? Because a lot of times I've worked with children and their parents where the great kids never really had a problem, started acting out in school, started talking during class, started being, you know, they say the class comedian, the class clown. And yes, it's great with the other kids and people think you're funny and you're accepted. But a lot of times these children do this because it takes away the distraction that they don't understand what's going on, that they have a learning disability. And teachers see it as bad behavior, or people say, oh, that kid is, you know, acting out, he's just trying to get attention. And what it could be is maybe, you know, there's ADHD, there's a learning disability. So I would also, if it's going on for long and you're really concerned, I would take him to your primary care doctor, have maybe an evaluation. Also, you know, go to a psychiatrist if you feel like. Doesn't mean he has to be on medication or anything like that. I'm not saying that because I know a lot of parents and children, they don't want, you know, put the kids on medication at a young age, and that's fine. I totally understand that. Doesn't mean if you see a psychiatrist you have to go on psychiatric medication. That's not the case. But I would always like to cover all your bases So maybe get a psychiatric evaluation if things are still going on. And also maybe getting into some therapy, seeing a therapist. You know, it doesn't have to be maybe long-term therapy. It could be short-term therapy, working on behavior problems. You know, maybe your son doesn't really understand what's going on with the isolation, you know, with the aggressive tendencies. This must be really hard for him, too, to be dealing with. It's, you know, if the adults don't understand what's going on, can you imagine what the children feel? It must be a very shaky time for him, a very uncomfortable time, and anxiety-producing time. So I would really seek professional help and see where to go from there. So technically to say what is wrong with him, there's a whole bunch of options. It might not be that anything is wrong with him, but I think there's some red flags, there's some cries for help, there's some things, triggers, there's things that are coming up that we need to pay attention to and not kind of just brush under the rug. So I would definitely speak to him, speak to his school, and then seek professional help if needed. That will take us into our first song, Amazing Grace, My Chains Are Gone, by Chris Tomlin.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me.
That was Amazing Grace, My Chains Are Gone by Chris Tomlin. Such an amazing, powerful song. One of my most favorite songs. Let's go on to our next question. Dear Insight into Healing, my 10-year-old son has been cutting. I recently divorced his father because of emotional and verbal abuse. Is this why he's cutting? This could be a beginning of why he's cutting. As I've done a couple of shows before, cutting versus suicide, there are many things that go on with cutting. When you said you recently divorced his father and you found him cutting, how long has the cutting been going on, I think, is one thing, if possible. To your knowledge, do you think it's been going on? Is this something you've just noticed? Or is it something that's kind of been, you've been expecting, or you've kind of been saying, I think something's been going on, you suspected that this was going on, or is this something I think totally out of the blue that hit you from left field, you didn't know was going on? This could be a good reason why he's cutting, because of the emotional abuse, number one, and the verbal abuse, and also because of the divorce. A lot of times, children begin cutting when they're feeling out of control, when they feel that their life is going out of control, when things are happening to them, happening around them, that they have no power over. And I think there's some three serious things going on in his life right now. The verbal abuse that was going on, the emotional abuse, and also the cutting and the divorce. I know a lot of times parents say, you know, I'm not sure if he was a witness to the emotional verbal abuse firsthand. I'm not sure if it was the verbal emotional abuse was towards you, the mother, or was towards him, the son, or the whole family, which I think that also breaks it down to a different degree of trauma. And I think a lot of times parents say, no, you know, it was just between me and the husband, and my child did not see it. They hear it. Children are very smart. At 10 years old, they have a good idea of what's going on. And I think another thing with children, they seem to blame themselves, even though it has nothing to do with them, and you can sit down and tell them this time and time and time again. This has nothing to do with them. This is between mommy and daddy. But the children will always blame themselves. They will always personalize it. I think one of the biggest fears for children is not having their mommy and daddy together, seeing their parents divorce. It's hard for them to see outside the box that this doesn't mean this is the end of everything. It's a breakup of a family for them. It's a breakup of a dream. And it's also, you know, introducing instability if it wasn't already there with the verbal and emotional abuse. There's chaos. There's instability. This is kind of a perfect storm, would I say, for cutting. It has different things going on. I'm not sure what other behaviors, if any, that he is showing. Are there any other red flags going on? We also want to see, as I said in our last question, to maybe talk to a teacher, to go to his school and see how he has been acting in school. Has he been isolating? Has he been aggressive? Have they noticed anything with the cutting or different behaviors that they could, you know, give you an idea about what's been going on in school? In regards to the cutting, I would not take this lightly. I would definitely seek professional help if your child is cutting. This is something they just, you know, I don't feel as a professional they just grow out of on their own. I think they need professional help. I think they need therapy. I think they need to be seen by a psychiatrist. They need a psychiatric evaluation. I'm not saying that there's a mental illness. I'm not saying there's anything seriously mentally wrong. But I'm saying this is a very serious, serious action that they're taking. Cutting doesn't always mean suicide. I also did another show on cutting and suicide, so you can also listen to that to give you a better understanding about what's going on with cutting and suicide. But I think, as I said before in a show I did, is if you do this behavior so many times, there's a chance it could be suicide, intentionally, unintentionally. I don't know with cutting, is he cutting his arm? Is he cutting the inside of his leg? Or is he carving initials? Is he carving different signs? Because at this age, that's usually something that starts happening if there's some sort of trauma, if there's some sort of conflict and chaos. Might start off with some scratching with the fingernails and, you know, making scratch marks, maybe not that, you know, maybe it wasn't a big deal. They could say they scratched themselves. But one thing with cutting that I've noticed, it escalates. It gets, the gestures get more intense, more serious, because just that one scratch with your fingernail doesn't release the pain as much as it did the first time. So maybe next time they're going to use a pencil. Maybe they're going to use a pen, and then I think sometimes they you know, might escalate to a razor, it might escalate to different things. So that's why I think it's very, very important to really figure out what's going on with the cutting and also get professional help for him. I would sit down with your son. I'm not sure if you have already, to discuss what's going on and also ask him, you know, what is he feeling? Is there anything else going on? I also like to always rule out when I see cutting any sexual abuse or eating disorders. I know sometimes they say, oh, boys don't have eating disorders. Boys have eating disorders too. So it's nothing to, there's no shame, no guilt. I would definitely get him evaluated to see if there's any history of sexual abuse, eating disorders. If not, I think then checking about what's going on and really having him see a therapist to say, how is he feeling? What does the cutting do? Because a lot of times I've worked with cutters, and what they say is the cutting releases the pain. And I know sometimes it doesn't make sense to people on the outside to say, what do you mean you're cutting yourself? You're causing pain. But to a cutter, their world is in such chaos, it is in such flux and so unbearable that they have no control. They can't stop, especially as a child. It's coming from every end. It's coming from every angle that they're so frightened and so overwhelmed. They use the cutting as a release, and it gives them some sort of control in a negative manner, but it gives them some power. It gives them some release, and it's so hard for them to release all this stuff that's going around. Also, you know, with the verbal and the emotional abuse, it sits with them. It starts going into their core, starts defining them. So that negative monologue starts building. It starts creating that. It keeps running in their mind, and those negative thoughts and negative feelings just keep going, going. It's almost like a nonstop tape recorder that keeps playing the same song over and over again. This is what happens with that negative monologue, and it becomes so unbearable that a child or a person starts cutting to release it. And what happens with cutting through time, you kind of have to keep cutting a little bit more. It doesn't, you know, this doesn't work anymore. You've got to kind of, as I say before, up the ante. So that's why I really want to make sure we catch him before this gets even worse than it is. And I think it's also, you know, really sitting down and talking to him and asking him, is this a suicidal gesture? And I know this, I'm talking about some pretty heavy stuff. And it's pretty scary, and it's pretty overwhelming, and a lot of parents want to say, that's not my child, he's not like that, this wouldn't happen. But it's very serious. And I think, you know, as I always say, safety first. You don't want to do this on your own. You definitely want to get professional help. You want this him to be seen by a professional to make sure everything's okay. This is something I think cutting through a lot of intense therapy and evaluation and supervision and teamwork approach can be worked on, can get better. I've worked with a lot of young children that are teens now that don't cut anymore, or at least have, you know, don't cut as much. And I know that's a frightening thought and a very upsetting thought to find your child cutting, or to know that your child is cutting or is in that in so much pain that they would inflict pain on themselves to release from this. And I think it's really also going into family therapy. It sounds like you've been through a lot. The family's been through a lot. I don't know if the father's going to be in the picture anymore. I don't know if you're going to have any restraining order or supervised visits. But I would also want to work on that, because a lot of times there's a divorce, there's verbal and emotional abuse. The husband leaves the home, and then the children are sent there on weekend visits. And sometimes the emotional abuse is still going on, the verbal abuse is still going on. And for a child to know that they have to go to that setting, and they have for a weekend have to endure this emotional verbal abuse and all this conflict, can be so overwhelming for the child too. So this is something maybe through the divorce, if you haven't already spoken to your lawyer, if this is something that's been discussed and identified in the divorce, and also having supervised visits. And also, I think allowing your 10-year-old son some have to feel like he has some power back, some control. It's about more empowering him, giving him empathy, creating a safe environment for him so he doesn't feel so trapped, so out of control, so like life is just happening all around him, on him, that he can't escape. We want to start bringing back some calmness into his life and for him to be able to process all this, and I think also to process the emotional abuse, the verbal abuse, and also the trauma of himself that he's cutting. It's a cry for help, and it's something that should not be ignored. So I would definitely sit down, speak with your son, but also make sure you seek professional help, because this is a very, very serious matter. That will take us into our next song, Who Am I? By Casting Crowns.
Who am I that the Lord of all the earth would care to know my name, would care to feel my hurt? Who am I that the bright and morning star would choose to light the way for my ever-wandering heart? Well, not because of who I am, but because of what you've done. Not because of what I've done, but because of who you are. You catch me when I'm falling, and you told me
That was Who Am I by Casting Crowns. Such a very powerful song. Let's go into our next question. Dear Insight into Healing, my 14-year-old daughter is boy crazy. She doesn't pay attention in school and is always texting or on the computer with boys. How can I stop this? I'm scared she is sexually active. Well, this can be a very tough time in her life, I think, and it's also a tough time for the parents at this age with a 14-year-old daughter, and I think that sometimes what is normal behavior for a 14-year-old at this time and what is something to be wary of, to start to say, okay, I think there's something going on, and it sounds like you're starting to have a hint that something, it might be a little more than normal, a little more than usual. You said you're scared that she might be sexually active. I would also, when you said she's on the computer and she's always on the phone and texting, if you've been able to see what she's saying, what are these conversations? Are they sexual based? Are they flirting? Are they maybe innocent about what's going on in school, or do you want to go to the movies? I think that's something really to take in and really to look at, is to really look at, if you can, and I know it's very controversial about children getting upset that you're checking their emails or their text messages or social media, but I think it's also, you know, for the safety of your child, to some point to sit down with her and say, I have some concerns. I want to know what's going on in your life. You know, I want to see who you're talking to and what you're saying. I would somehow say, you know, can you get an idea of what the content is, and really going from there. If there is some serious sexual content, I think that's something definitely to sit down with your daughter at this age and really explore, if you haven't, what's going on. I know this whole big thing of sexting and sending pictures, sexual pictures of their body parts, is something children or teenagers think is cute and fun and everybody's doing it, but it's a very serious, serious matter. And, you know, I think also that the human body is a sacred thing. It is not meant to be up on social media. It's not meant for everybody to look at. That is my professional and also my personal opinion. I find sometimes things are, there's no boundaries, nothing sacred anymore, that, you know, the people say, oh, the body's a beautiful thing. Yes, but it needs to be shared with in a serious setting, in a safe setting. And I think someone at 14 years old does not have the judgment or the emotional growth or ability to make those type of decisions. So I think if there is any sexual pictures going on or sexting going on, this is something that you really want to sit down with your 14-year-old now. And it sounds like you say she's really not paying attention in school, and she's always, you know, in contact with boys. Also, what is her grades like? Is she failing? I think that's a really important thing to take a look at. And again, as I said in some of these other questions, when there's young kids and young adults and teens, to really get the school involved in some way if you trust them. I know sometimes schools are another thing, that can be a whole other show. But I think it's finding someone that you trust at the school. Is it a teacher? Is it a guidance counselor? Is it an aide or something, or teacher's assistant, to really, you know, maybe talk to them and say, what do you see? I mean, what's her behavior in school? How is she acting with boys in school? How is her relationship with her peers, female peers, male peers? Is there any bullying going on? You know, I would also want to see what's going on. Is she over-sexualized? Because then that starts bringing up a whole new red flag to look at, that if she's very sexual, if she's over-sexualized for her age, I'd really want to find out, where is that stemming from? What's going on with that? Because sometimes young girls at a certain age, if there's been any inappropriate sexual behavior or sexual trauma towards them, sometimes some will isolate and some will start acting out very sexually. They will become over-sexualized. I know that's kind of jumping ahead and jumping the gun, but I like to kind of take everything into consideration and keep it out on the table. And so we all know what's going on and what are the possibilities. So if there is anything going on, we're prepared for it. We're able to address it and start working through it. And I think it's also, what is also just normal behavior for a 14-year-old girl? She's growing. She's starting that process of becoming a woman. Is she exploring her sexuality? Does she have questions about her body growth, different body development. I think it's also really sitting down and talking to your daughter and saying, you know, what's going on? Is this something uncontrollable? Do you find that she says, you know, she's boy crazy, she's always on in contact with them. Is this kind of an obsessive behavior? Is she almost, you know, obsessed with boys? Is it more than what a normal 14-year-old would be? Because I think that also can be, you know, a warning sign and something to say, okay, what's going on? Is she very emotionally needy with these boys? Is she trying to seek something to fill a void in herself, and she feels getting attention from boys is the way to seek or to receive that attention, that love, that caring, to feel good about herself? And I think that's something we really want to look at. So many young girls have such body image issues, and I think with the media and everything, there's so much pressure to be perfect, to be thin, to be beautiful, to be wearing this, to be doing looking this way, that at this age and these young kids growing up have so much pressure of what they should look like, how they should dress, what they should be, you know, how their personality should be, that I want to make sure they don't start acting out these, you know, acting these behaviors that aren't who they really are, just to gain attention, just to be accepted. I would really want to, like, you know, look at your daughter's body image issues. Also, maybe explore her self-esteem. How does she feel about herself? Has she always been a confident child growing up? Has she always been maybe not confident about herself? Is there also a recent change in behavior? Is there a recent change in attitude, dress, eating habits? Is she dressing a little more provocative? Is she not eating as much? Is she, you know, becoming more aggressive? I think sometimes there's some of this is to some degree what happens to young girls and young boys when they grow up. They go through that transition stage. But I think it's also there's a fine line to watch it and to make sure, you know, is this getting too much? Is there a red flag? Is there something going on? And I also think, you know, is she sexually active? I'm not sure if you have those conversations with her, but I think to sit down with her and, you know, ask her, you know, what's going on? I see that you're on the phone with these boys. I see, is it the same boy? Are they different boys? I think it's one thing to really look at, too. Is she in communication with just one person? Is this her boyfriend and she's frightened to say it? I don't know if you allow dating at that age in your house or if it's unacceptable, if certain things are, you know, what's going on with the rules in the house, if that's something to express. Are there different boys? Are these all different boys calling, talking and texting? I think that also is something to really look at. And really asking her, you know, what is she expecting? What is her motive, if she can kind of look at it? Why does she do this behavior? Does she want to be popular like most young people want to do? Or is there, you know, some insecurity? Is she not feeling good about herself? Is there some things going on in her life? Is this kind of a warning sign or an idea that something's not right? She's not feeling good. Is there any type of eating disorder? Is there any body issue, body image issues? I think it's really, really exploring it with your daughter. And then if you do find out that she's sexually active, I know it's a hard thing to find out for a parent at 14 years old that your daughter is sexually active, and it happens. It happens all the time. But I think it's being able to have, after you calm down and process it yourself as a parent and as an adult, to really sit down and have a conversation with her and a discussion of what is she doing, safety reasons, who is she hanging out with, and, you know, really talking about if she's sexually active, you know, precautions. Is she having sexual intercourse? Is, you know, what is actually going on? And really exploring, you know, how she feels with it. Is she even comfortable? Is this something that she agrees to? And I think at the age of 14, sometimes kids do things to be accepted by everybody else, but they're not really comfortable with it. So I think it's really sitting down with her and having this conversation. And I know it's easier said than done. I'm on the radio here and I'm saying to do this. And it's one of those conversations you don't want to have. I totally understand. But I think it's something that, you know, it's a conversation I think every parent should have with their child, just to make sure, you know, to touch base with them, to see if you're all on the same page, and also open up that communication, because she's at that age now where, you know, alcohol is being introduced, drugs are being introduced, there could be bullying going on. So we really want to keep that an open, safe environment for your daughter to be able to come to you and talk to you about it. That will take us into our last song by Mercy Me, Bring the Rain.
I can count a million times people asking me how I can praise you for all that I've gone through. The question just amazes me. Circumstances possibly change who I forever am.
Was Mercy Me, Bring the Rain. Before the end of our show, let's do our journaling exercise. Our exercise for tonight's show is write down an event in your life that was a turning point and why. This can be an event either positive or negative, to find out what was the turning point. What did this event choose for you? What did it make you understand? What did it happen? What did it change in your life? And why sometimes I like to do these journaling exercises is so many times we don't really realize or pay attention to the major life events that have happened in our childhood, growing up, or even as an adult that have been turning points for us. And I think it's important to acknowledge them and explore them and to process them to see what changed you as a person. What is this event in your life that you'll remember that you said, okay, wow, I chose a different path. It opened up my eyes. And it can also be a very positive event where it gave you hope, it gave you peace. Or it can also be a negative event in your life, but you learned a lesson from. Maybe you learned how to set boundaries. You learned how to maintain boundaries. You learned to recognize your own self-worth and also demand and expect others to treat you with respect, to treat you with the dignity and how you're supposed to be treated. So I think I don't want this journaling exercise to traumatize you or to get you very, very upset or bring you back to a dark place if this life event is a negative life event. I'm looking at it as a stepping stone, as a tool of your growth, as a part of your journey that has begun your healing. And also, I think it's also very inspirational to share that with others. Also, as you know, all my questions and anything, my correspondence on this show is confidential. Names and addresses and all that will never be revealed. So if you have a life-turning event that happened in your life that you grew from, that you've got growth from, spiritually, mentally, verbally, physically, anything, please share it with us. You can send me an email at insightintohealing@gmail.com, or you can go to our Facebook page, Insight into Healing. You can also give me a private message, send it in a message. I will not include your names or any identifying information, and I can use it on the show. What I really want for the show is for the listeners, our community, to help each other, for all of us to grow and to assist each other and to be, I always say in a lot of my shows, we need a team. It's teamwork. We need, you know, a team approach. And I feel that through the months, I mean, I was just thinking about our show. My show has been on for more than about 6 months, and the support and the correspondence I've had from listeners and from people that have really been helped by the show or that has been touched by the show or caused them to grow or change their behavior or even gave them insight and began the healing process is so rewarding. It's just so humbling and such an amazing thing that I really feel I would like to get everybody involved and really have, you know, you're the community, you're what makes this show. I mean, your support and your acknowledgement, I really appreciate. And I just want to thank you all so much for supporting me and for really reaching out and really supporting Insight into Healing. Well, the song that took us in the beginning of the show was Every Good Thing by The Actors, and it will be the song that takes us out. So everybody, good night and God bless.